Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. Look who's here.
Right. Speaking of Kenny G. Jazz.
Time for the NBA draft tonight. One of the most anticipated drafts ever, really, considering who's at the very top. Coach Seth Greenberg with us now. Coach, I
how do you put up with him?
It's another way around. I'm with this guy every day.
Oh, I am the model. I'm a model of perfect behavior. Citizen? No, a professional male model, obviously. Did you not see the intro?
Yes, hey, he's got the hair for it, at least.
He does. That's
it.
Yeah.
Coach, just for men.
I've been thinking recently about Wembanyama a lot, of course, and it occurred to me that one of the best predictors of how great a player is going to be is actually the level of hype in the draft. Think about this. Kareem and LeBron were the most hyped ever. Those are two of the best players ever. Below them, there's like a level of like Shaq, maybe Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, like, oh my God, this guy's can't mess. They weren't, right? Even Zion, heavily hyped, when he's on the floor, he's quite good in the NBA when he's on the floor. Wembanyama, I would say, is hyped at least as much as someone like Shaq, maybe not quite as much as LeBron or Kareem. What's this guy going to be?
Well, first of all, Max, the guy's the overall number one pick in the draft. Most times the overall number one pick, even he was hyped. I mean, to get two-time player of the year in college basketball. Unfortunately, there was a 7'7 guy that was...
There's a lot of those guys around.
But I mean, the most hyped tend to be all-time greats in the
NBA. Well, you know, there's a reason. Look, he is a special, special talent. Here's my worry about Victor Wembanyama, and it has nothing to do with his long-term success. Are we hyping him to the point where people aren't realistic of what he's going to do in the first 2 or 3 years? Because there's going to be a learning curve. That's just the way it is. He's going to play 82 games, 100 games if you include summer league and preseason. He's going to be playing against grown men each and every day. That body at whatever it is, 210, you're going to get a 6'8 guy when he plays four, or a 6'5 guy when he plays four. It's going to get into him, especially if I don't think there'll be a playoff team early, and wear him out. But his talent, his skill, his ability to impact the game defensively is undeniable. His future, undeniable, as long as he stays healthy.
That's a big thing because he's a giant. You never know how the guy's body is going to react to the NBA. Well,
that's where a lot of guys that are like playing around 7'2", 7'3", 7'4", right? Like
Ralph.
You know, look, Ralph Sampson, we talked about it, which I think his game is a combination set between Ralph and Dirk, right, with the way they play.
Ralph was in the wrong era.
Yeah. Exactly. But even a guy like my draft class, like Yao Ming had so much potential but had feet issues, right? So like the wear and the tear of the season – I mean, even for guys, Seth, how do you feel about for certain players when they kind of make it known, like, hey, I may not play in summer league? Because now it's all about, like, what you produce during the season, not about the prep that it typically takes to get you ready for the season.
He will come into the league with probably load management. Just because, look, let's face it, the investment that they have in him, Pop's smart. I mean, he's smart. He's going to understand what his body can take.
Yeah, they've been doing load. They invented load management.
But here's the thing. And everyone says, well, Spurs are perfect. They are perfect. And Pop's a perfect guy to coach him. And, Timmy Duncan being around. And, it's going to be great for him because, what Timmy Duncan went through. Timmy Duncan had David Robinson to protect him. I mean, Tim and Duncan, they were – I'm not saying that they were like, bros and they hung out all the time or whatever. But when they got on the court, all right, David Robinson had the ability to help Timmy Duncan navigate just the necessary process.
Not only that, but people forget this. David Robinson, a recent MVP at the time, right? Scoring champion, the whole thing. David Robinson said before Tim Duncan's rookie season ever started, we need to run the team through him. Like, he also happened to be an extremely team-oriented superstar at that point who played a similar position. Like, that was a rare situation. But Wembanyama does have Pop. He does have Popovich.
Oh, he does have Pop. Look, I think a great season for Wembanyama this year, not future, but this year. One, look, they're a very young roster. I mean, even look at the roster, and Johnson and Sohan, and they're not built to be a playoff team, but they should be in contention for a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
10 teams in the play, and now 10 teams still playing right after
Rookie of the Year, endure the season without an injury. Get used to the physicality. And then the most impressive thing to me is I'm watching all these interviews, and it's a testament to how the European players are mentored in a different way. He's, what, 19 years old?
Yep.
He carries himself like a grown man.
He's only 19, but his mind is older, Jay.
Yeah, I mean,
well, he's played with grown men.
And he's been held accountable.
Yes.
Like when you play overseas and you're that young player, that young talented player, you are held accountable for doing things in a certain way. As opposed to, say, our young players who are really talented and great young people, but they're enabled to the point where, like, right now in college basketball, there are guys that tell me, well, you know, if I coach that guy really hard, if I hold him, you know, accountable, I hold him to the standard, well, he might treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it's, you know, well, what's his NIL deal? What's this? What's that? Those young players in Europe, because he's playing with pros since he's 15 years old, they don't treat him as any differently than teaching him how to be a pro, how to carry yourself, you know, the accountability every day in practice, the two-a-days, everything that they do is just different than it is in the States. And you listen to his interview. I listened to the interview last night. He's a grown man.
You know what I always say, Seth, when people ask me these type of questions? Well, what's a better route to the NBA? Is it through college basketball or is it through overseas or organizations like Overtime Elite? I'm like, well, it depends upon what you want, right? College basketball gives you a ton of visibility. It gives you a ton of branding. Like, I mean, look at what we have with the second pick in the draft and Brandon Miller. Now, we've talked about him for some wrong reasons, right? But still, from a presentation perspective, like, a lot of people know about Brandon Miller. A lot of people don't know as much about Scoot Henderson, right? Yeah. But that same issue that you just made mention of, enabling, not being able to hold kids accountable. When you start seeing guys like Scoot or guys like Victor Wembanyama, they've been coached hard, right? They understand what kind of workload goes into being a pro. That is a major advantage going into the next stage of your career.
Yeah, I agree, Jay Will, but here's where I disagree. I think college coaches do a great job getting guys ready for draft.
I'm just saying like the ability to just be like, I don't want to be here anymore. I can go somewhere else.
That has changed. But like it really ticks me off. Like people, well, you know, season's over. Guy puts his name in the draft. I'll tell you one thing. He showed stuff he couldn't do in college. He's learning the NBA game. Learn the NBA game. Look, I understand the spacing. I understand the rules. I understand all that. But college coaches, they're teaching you to pass, catch, move without the ball, read screens.
But to your earlier point, Coach, Tim Bontemps was talking about this yesterday on This Just In. Fantastic show, 2 p.m. Eastern.
2 p.m. Eastern time. I heard about it.
Yeah. But he was saying, like, being around Zion before the draft and being around Wembanyama before the draft, different. Like, one of the reasons he believes in Wembanyama is the way he comports himself, right? To your earlier point and to the point, Jay, that you just highlighted, he carries himself in a way that conveys the sense he understands what's at stake, what's going on, what it's going to take, in a way that was markedly different than Zion, for example.
Yeah, like Zion Williamson's his own worst enemy. I mean, plain and simple, his own worst. Like, here, do you want to be a great player? Right, then get your tail in shape. And until you're in shape, you can't improve. I always believe that until you're in shape, you can't improve. You can only be so good. And with his body and his size, running, jumping, changing directions, it is an accident waiting to happen. That's why he's not been available, because of all the injuries. He needs to be in an environment, plain and simple. He needs to get out of there, because forget about, look, CJ McCollum is a great mentor, I'm sure. But it doesn't start in the locker room. It starts in the administration. He's got to be in an environment where he is held accountable for anything and everything he does. And most importantly, it's a 12-month, 7-day-a-week job to take care of your body so that you can be the player that you need to be. Because, you know, I was just talking to Timmy Legler. Like, he's another injury away from just being extinct.
It feels close to it. The only thing I would ask for Zion in return is you have to improve your value for me to get rid of you. I can't trade you for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, but what if they believe that his value is only going to go down because of what Coach just highlighted?
Well, that's why I keep coming back to it. I think this is a really big year. I think if you were to try to sell him right now, his stock is low, and I think teams know that.
What does he weigh right now?
I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't seen him. I mean, I saw him in one commercial. It did not look good.
I mean, like my thing is, you know, you're a race car. Your body's as an athlete, you're like, so what you put into your body –
what you get out of it.
What you get out of it. So, like, to me,
Memphis
is
diet.
Is he going to have the maturity? Is he going to have the maturity and the discipline and the environment to do the right things, be consistent with his approach, to have a chance to become the player that he could be?
But so, doesn't this go back to my point a little bit about college, right? Now that you have agents involved, and I think college is moving more towards like
they're GMs and like, player development.
Yeah, it's moving more towards being a pro, yeah. Right?
Oh.
But like, here's some of the advantages. Number one is you could be held accountable when you become a pro. You start getting paid. I'm like, okay, you're not getting paid. You're off this team. You're done. And I think a lot of the challenges, and you get this. I mean, we talk to Tom Izzo about it all the time. You know, some of these star-studded players come in, just not with them and their own ego, with their teams, with their people, trying to tell you. And it discourages you away from, you know, like, well, what the coach actually tells you to do, because it's really about, like, what you need to do to get ready for the
next 7 months.
Like, you don't have them long enough. That's the problem.
It's hard to win.
That's why there needs to be a 2-year commitment. Like, if you want to go to college, give me a 2-year commitment. Give me a 2-year contract. That's it. Sign up.
But this is not an issue.
And that solves
the
portal.
Because he was already a pro. He had already signed a contract. He was already held accountable. Mm-hmm.
And also, there may be something just about his emotional makeup that is, you know, there's something intrinsically good about the way his emotional, psychological makeup is. You know, he's got that thing, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know the guy. I'm just watching video and watching interviews, and his being, his presence, mm-hmm. is of a very successful, whatever he does, mm-hmm. young person.
Well, the fact that he's 7 foot whatever he is and can shoot and block shots.
One-legged
jumpers. He's got the little,
Dirk.
And look, he's got the little Dirk in him. Where he's going to impact the game right away is defensively. He's Inspector Gadget.
Did the Grizzlies get the right type of veteran for Ja Morant? That's coming up. Thanks, Coach. KJM.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today. The number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
So guys, we're talking just then during the commercial break about the Celtics and the move they just made for Kristaps Porzingis. You had a question for Jay, Coach.
Yeah,
Coach,
look, Seth Greenberg. I think it's a great move by the Celtics. But let me ask you, Jay, being you've been in those locker rooms, a year ago, Marcus Smart was untouchable. He was a Celtic. He was the voice of this team. He was the toughest they needed. He was the one guy that they would not move. Now, if you're in that locker room, and then all of a sudden, boom, we're going to get Porzingis. Boom, Marcus Smart's out the door. If you're Tatum, if you're Brown, if you're Brogdon, if you're the core unit of that team, do you just look at it like, or do you say, you know what, it's business is business. That's what the NBA is all about. His ability to help us get better has expired because he's not defending the way he was. I love Marcus Smart, but he's out the door, and now we have a better chance to win with Porzingis. So how does the locker room, the veteran guys here, because like you got two guys that mm-hmm. have had trade rumors or – you know, trade bait, move up in the draft, whatever, you know, in Brown and Tatum. I mean, how do those guys look at it? Because you've been in that situation.
So during this last postseason run, they had just come off a loss. and I forget what game it was against, in a series against Miami, and they were practicing at home, Seth, and you started hearing all these reports about how Al Horford was challenging the team because they weren't practicing hard. They weren't getting ready for the battle that they were about to witness. Hence, they end up losing the series, right, overall. So for me, I think anything that happens to you in your life, you can use as an opportunity to grow. And I think this is a moment in time in which it is set up perfectly for Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or both collectively to step in and feel that role as the heart, the soul, the passion, the drive for this team. Because I think Marcus Smart naturally did that. And I think when somebody naturally does it, you kind of take it for granted. You know what I mean? Like, we've been through stuff before. You're like, somebody does something, and all of a sudden you leave
now
and you're like, well, damn.
Forcing those guys to have to
You have to
adapt.
Do it. And I think that's the missing piece to what's been missing for that squad.
And maybe that makes those two guys be guys that not only can produce but actually can help each other. You know, like this, this summer's real simple. Tatum, Brown, they've got to find a way not just to be successful, but to make each other better and then make the game easier. Great players make the game easier for everyone around them. They've got to make the game easier for White. They've got to make the game easier for now Porzingis. And I do think Porzingis changes a little bit. You got two post guys, two different personalities. Both guys can defend a lot of dribble handoff stuff, a lot of pick and pop, a lot of short rolls. That's something that Porzingis will excel at, and he will excel in ball screen defense, which is his numbers are terrific.
Can I just tell you right now, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown need to spend the whole damn summer together. I don't care who your trainer is. You are attached by the hip. 100%. Compete in every damn drill. Challenge each other. Like, they need to be in the best shape. Yeah. And by the way, Malcolm Brogdon, come on. Like, come on. Like, all you guys, Robert, come on. Like, this is what we're doing. Like, it needs to be like that unified
Brogdon
mission.
Might be quiet as kept. Like, if Brogdon, obviously Porzingis has to stay healthy.
He's got the wrist issue, too.
If Brogdon could somehow stay healthy, limit his minutes, 20, 25, whatever that's going to be, I think I might like them to win the whole thing if they're healthy. Like, they got a lot of talent on this team now. They come close every single year. They're
that
close.
That Mile High team isn't going anywhere.
I'm not saying they are, but I'm saying that's a lot. Celtics got a lot.
Now, hey, you were teased. You know, you're talking about Marcus Smart, though.
Yeah.
That is a blessing for Ja. Grizzlies.
Oh, my goodness.
And Ja.
Oh, my goodness.
If he allows himself. Like, here's the deal.
Meaning Ja?
Ja. Like, here's the deal. You know, it's like, it's only, I used to use this analogy all the time in recruiting. You know, I'll graduate every single guy that wants to be graduate. Because you can't graduate someone if he doesn't want to go to class and do the things you need to graduate. If Ja Morant buys into to growing up and buys into Marcus Smart's leadership, then this is a home run. He brings toughness. He's got all the swag that you'd want, but he's got the maturity and leadership. Now, that's got to be supported. Like, all this stuff, you know, people say, like, heat culture. Spo's great. He is. But that dude upstairs, when it starts in the NBA, in college basketball, it starts with your head coach. In the NBA, it starts with your front office. Your front office really basically creates the culture and supports the culture and then passes it down to the team, but they have to be the one that holds everyone accountable. The front office has got to basically make statements and have a standard to hold everyone in the organization to, and the first move is Marcus Smart.
Meantime, Jay also makes the point that they now have an elite defender in the backcourt and an elite defender in the frontcourt.
Yeah, Jackson.
On top of everything else.
Yeah. No. I mean, they have a very interesting team. And Ja Morant, I did the first story on him. I got sent to do the Belmont Murray State game. And I love the kid. Absolutely. We did a film session. He sat and talked about his teammates. You could see how he interacted with Coach McMahon. Again, from that point to see where he is today is mind blowing to me because I thought he was genuine, humble, hardworking, unbelievable teammate. Again, starts at the top. You've got to find a way to make sure you're only as good as your last decision. In life, you're only as good as your last decision. And he's got to clean it up.
I do think,
I'll tell you one thing too, Seth. Like, if I'm Zach Klein, the GM of the Memphis Grizzlies, I am literally on the phone with Masai Ujiri every damn day with Toronto. I'm looking, I'm like, are you guys having a fire sale? What are you doing? Is Pascal Siakam available? Because he would be a key cog in our team that could lead us to a championship. And if not so, if that draft...
Well, who do you give up?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think they have draft capital. They have draft capital to work with. Or a guy like OG Anunoby. Like, I think he will go for less than Siakam. I think he's a great additional piece that can fill in that wing.
Mature, knows how to play. Player. You need, exactly. Look at the two teams that were in the finals. Right? Like, let's just look at them. What are their DNAs? What are their makeup? Tough, winning players. Accountability. Consistency. Like, I got a kick at everyone. Michael Malone, you know, after they lose game two, you know, he called out his team. What do we say? Hey, guys, that's all fine. We lost, you know, we lost at home. Everything's... No. You know what? If you have a relationship with your players, if they respect you, like, everyone's afraid to, oh, he called out his guys. You know what? All he did was show 17 clips, and he told them the truth.
Yeah. There was no denying that one.
Yeah, here's the deal. Calling out his guys, no. It's called coaching. It's called accountability.
But also, coach,
it's holding to a standard.
They were patient with that team in the sense that they didn't panic in the last several years when Jamal Murray 100%. Wasn't available. They stayed with it. Okay, one of these years, these guys are all going to be together. Yeah. And the whole question was now that, because he was always very good, Jokic, but now that he's playing at MVP level, what would happen? He wasn't great in the playoffs against the Lakers when they lost in the bubble. What will happen when they're all healthy? Can Jokic, oh yeah, oh my God, what happened was they destroyed everybody. And so when you look at the Celtics, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, well, can they win together? Isn't that actually...
It's a process.
They're 25 and 26 years old.
It's a process.
They've been in the conference finals almost every year of their career. Mm-hmm. And even if they didn't win a championship for another 3 years, they'd still be under 30 if you keep
stick
these two
with your
together.
Coaches and stick with your core players. Coach them, develop the trust. That's how you develop a championship culture. You see all these coaches getting fired this year. You know, people are quick to make a change. If you believe in what you're doing, how you're doing it, why you're doing it, you believe in the players that are in your organization, patience is key. Patience, because you know it's hard. Winning is hard. Winning championships is hard. Developing chemistry is hard. Developing trust is hard. All those things take time because there's 29 other teams trying to do the same thing. Everyone's looking for a quick fix. The quick fix isn't there. It just isn't. And, you know, Denver, but if you look at the character and you look, and it, you know, it starts with your, you know,
it
your
starts
best
with
players
ownership good, because ownership has to make the front office feel. Yeah. You don't need to race in the next 2 years to show, you know, we believe the ownership has to trust the front office to have a long term plan and let them execute.
And when your best players are high character and tough winning players, when your best players, and this is like your best play, if your best players are high character, tough, winning players, then all of a sudden, that's the key. Jamal Murray, Jokic, Jimmy Butler. You go through the champ. They always have Kobe when the Lakers were great. I mean, that's how you build a champ. You keep a championship identity.
Coach Seth Greenberg, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't be stealing that stuff later.
I'm
see you write
down.
Stuff down.
He's writing it down.
I see. I don't
I'm taking your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not enough.
Remember the first time, Seth.
It's not enough you took my Anunoby take today.
That was a good take.
That was not Max's take.
Oh, what?
And by the way, we know, Max, they went for Anunoby already. You know that, right? They offered 3 first-round draft picks for him.
They offered 3 firsts?
3, and Toronto said no.
Masai Ujiri.
What?
Savage.
How does Zion's teammates feel about him? That's the question, KJM.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. King McClure hanging out with us here in studio. ESPN basketball analyst. Meantime, yeah, a little.
You know, we got a big interview when you got Notorious B.I.G. coming on before the interview.
You know, whenever we say, you know what this team needs, their roster isn't deep enough. You know what they need? They kind of need Trey Murphy, right? Like, that's kind of what all these teams need. Pelicans. What do I call you? A two? A three? What, a three and D? What,
just tell this man you call me a player, Trey.
Let him answer.
I just play basketball, man. That's it.
Thank you, Matt. Always trying to put some label on something.
Well, identify what position they play. Yes, as a matter of fact.
Are you a two?
That's right. Don't try to turn this into a bad thing.
I'm Trey Murphy, man. Let me be me.
Trey, what do you think of?
Yeah, exactly.
Hold on, Max. I gotta kick this thing off differently, though, because this is. I'm a fan of yours, Trey. But I gotta ask you a serious question right from the jump, and I need you to be real. There's so much talk around your teammate this offseason with the draft tonight and Zion Williamson. And I hate to be that person, but I have to. People are questioning what kind of teammate he is. Is he around? Does he spend time around the players at the organization? Can you help us understand what kind of teammate Zion Williamson is?
So I was in New Orleans for the past 2 days, and 2 days ago, Zion was in the building with us. And, you know, every time I'm talking with him, you know, it's always jokes, always a lot of love. He's watching me during my workouts. He's doing his own thing. Like, whenever we're around each other, it's always a good time. Like, there's a lot of things that the media says, and there's a lot of things that, you know, people might see from the outside looking in, but they just don't know exactly what type of person he is. He cares about his teammates a lot. And, you know, when he's out there competing with us, you can tell there's just a level of joy that you can see that is infectious. And he plays with so much energy. It really just, you know, resonates with us.
So, Trey, I got to ask a follow-up question here, because you said something interesting. And, you know, we listen to words for a living now. So you said whenever we are together. So I know for me, my rookie year in Chicago, like me and Jamal Crawford, who are still boys today, like we are always together. Like, we were always working out.
Yeah.
So, like, is it the same kind of camaraderie? Is it the same kind of closeness and tightness? Like, and how much is he around the organization with the way the rest of the team works out?
Well, I mean, on my rookie year, we can just go back to that. I mean, he had to go out, you know, out of New Orleans to, you know, do his rehab and things like that. And so, I mean, that's part of a, you know, that's just part of basketball at the end of the day, is being injured. Like, it's going to happen. I mean, Joel Embiid, he was injured a lot his first 3 years. So it happens at the end of the day. But he's around. And, you know, during his workouts, during his rehab time, you know, I was there with him just watching him work out, trying to let him know, you know, I'm here with you, brother. Like, it's, you're not alone in this, because, you know, a lot of times when people get injured and they have to do their rehab either after practice or before practice, you know, not a lot of guys might not be around during that time. So, you know, they might feel a little, you know, ostracized from the team. And, you know, I just try to make sure I made them, you know, understand that I'm still here with you, brother.
You know, Trey, tonight is a draft. How much do you personally pay attention to that? And how do you feel like that affects you?
Affects me? I wouldn't say it affects me, because at the end of the day, like, I know what I can bring to the table. And, you know, it's tough when, you know, you've come from college and going to the NBA. There's a big jump that you have to make. And I feel like I've definitely made my leaps. And so, like, those guys have to make their own leaps. But I pay attention to everything basketball related, because I just love basketball. So, you know, I have a pretty good grasp on, you know, the guys coming into this class. It's a pretty talented class. So, you know, I'm very excited for them. And, you know, they're about to change their lives for, you know, the best for them.
So, obviously, Wembanyama is on everyone's mind. We've been asking today, like, about some other players that might have an impact on teams. But which team do you think needs to nail their pick, whether it's high up or not, the most when you survey the NBA?
Needs to. That's a tough one. I mean, because at the end of the day, like, everybody can use their picks. I feel like, you know, Indiana, they have, you know, a pretty important pick, you know, to make, because they need wing depth. And there's definitely a lot of guys at that seventh spot that they can get to. The Rockets, obviously, you know, they always add talent, and, you know, they're always trying to figure things out. And then the big question mark is definitely Portland on what they're going to do, especially if, you know, just depending on what happens at two. But, you know, there's definitely a lot of important decisions to be made on draft night.
So, obviously, Trey, you guys have the 14th pick in this year's NBA draft tonight, this evening. What do you think your team needs to do to continue to improve, to compete for an NBA championship? What kind of player do you guys need to draft?
It's tough to say at the end of the day because, you know, we have a really good team right now, especially when we're healthy. And, you know, definitely just adding pieces that can just help fit around the guys we have now. I mean, obviously, shooting is always going to be a premium. Defense, protecting the rim, rebounding, those are going to be things that we look for. You know, I feel like because every team needs that. And it's complementary pieces to, you know, our guys that we have on the team now.
Troy, I have another question. How the hell did Duke let you get away? What happened here? I mean, aren't you from Durham, North Carolina? What the hell is going on? How do we miss that?
See, on the first one, coming out of high school, I let it slide because I only had 6 offers. I wasn't, you know, a highly touted recruit. But when I transferred, though, there's no excuses. No excuses whatsoever.
I'm mad. I got to give Coach K and John Shire a call. I'm mad at it. I'm mad at it.
Please do, actually, because I definitely would have considered it. I definitely would have.
Now, I keep being told that no, it won't happen. But just in case it does, or maybe even if it doesn't, what do you think of Scoot Henderson?
I mean, I definitely think he's a good player. He loves the game. I think that's really what I can tell about him that is really important when it comes to being in the NBA is your mentality. And I can tell that he really loves the game. And he just plays with a lot of joy. He plays with a lot of energy. And he has a chance to be a generational talent because of his athleticism and, you know, his ability and talent level. So I definitely think he can be, you know, one of those guys that can be the face of the franchise.
Would he be fun to play with, do you think?
Trying to set this man up.
You're trying to lead me into something. I see what you're doing.
I think like Scoot Henderson needs to play alongside, I don't know, a guy with like length who can defend and shoot from distance. He needs a guy like, you know, like that would be the right kind of player to put. So I'm just wondering, just hypothetically, what it would be like to play with him. Would it be fun, do you think?
Hypothetically, let's make sure we emphasize that. Absolutely. I mean, he's point guard, they can pass the ball, and he's very dynamic. So he's getting down into the paint, you know, making the defense collapse, and then it makes my job easier because I'm shooting open shots and I'm not missing too many open shots.
I see you, Trey, with the politically responsible take back to a question like that. I like that. We have about a minute left, but I am curious, man, just because, you know, a lot of people – say they want to get drafted, but they don't understand how difficult it is, especially getting acclimated your rookie season. Can you take us through a little bit about the challenge of, you know, how to get adjusted to not only the NBA lifestyle, but also the on the court type of play?
Yeah, no, I'll tell anybody, my rookie year was probably the hardest year of basketball I've ever had in my entire life. I went through spells where I didn't play for like 10 games. I get sent down to the G League. I play some on the main team. Don't play again for a stretch of time. And it's just a mental toughness that you have in order to, you know, get through that and, you know, just be persistent. And my biggest advice for that is, you know, just staying consistent in your work and keeping your mind even. Like, try not to get too high, try not to get too low. Because the NBA season, there's so many ups and downs. There's injuries that happen. Your opportunity may come, and you just have to be ready. And that's really all it boils down to for me, because I know I didn't really start playing until around, like, late February. And that's a long time for, you know, somebody that's a first-round pick on your team. And it's not like I was, like, later first-round. I was 17. So, you know, just making sure you – stay confident in yourself. Being strong mentally is, you know, what helps push you through your rookie year so you can be successful.
Trey Murphy, I like the way you answer these questions. Straight to the point. Not hiding anything. He even answered the Scoot Henderson. Yeah, this is what I'm talking about.
To set my man up, man.
But
hypothetically answered that one.
He didn't duck it. He made sure to say hypothetically, yeah. And then he answered the question. That's what I'm talking about. Trey Murphy, Pelicans. 2-3 basketball player, whatever you want to call him. Is. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right,
appreciate
Trey.
It.
Good luck tonight.
I appreciate y'all. Thank you.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. King McClure, ESPN basketball analyst, hanging out with us, former Baylor guard. So, I don't know. This is when you think about the biggest, most hyped guys at the top of the NBA draft in history, I think LeBron and Kareem, then Lou Alcindor, are at the very, very top. Mm-hmm. And then guys like Shaq and Patrick Ewing and David Robinson. What you notice is the guys who are the most hype are the big physically different guys. Like Zion was very hyped also, although people wonder, can he be the best player in a championship team? Guys shaped like that haven't been in the past. But it's always, you know, height is the easiest thing to project. So those 7-footers, and in LeBron's case, 6'8", but he's like, you know,
freak.
Magic meets Michael.
I think you got to put Greg Oden in there, man.
I don't think Oden was hyped like that, Jay. I don't think
Max,
so.
Max, I remember
there were a lot of questions
draft,
about Odom.
There were questions, but I'm trying to tell you, that dude.
Oden was hyped.
He was super hyped.
Oden was hyped.
Guys, I'm just
super hyped.
I remember talking to a lot of people being, I don't know about Oden. Should he be the number one pick? All that stuff at the time. There was no question. Like when the Knicks won the first ever draft lottery, whoever drafted first, taking Patrick Ewing, like clearly. There was no like, hey, I wonder if, none of that. David Robinson, Shaquille O'Neal, same thing. Like that was the dude. Wembanyama, I think, has been hyped more than anyone except Kareem and LeBron. This is one. So from that point of view, this could turn out to be one of the most important drafts in the history of basketball.
I think that's factual. I mean, we'll see tonight, and I think that his ceiling is just so incredible. I mean, the fact that we've never seen anything like it. We've seen tall guys. We've seen 7-footers. We've seen guys be able to shoot the ball like Kevin Durant, to be tall and move the way he moves. But to be, like Dre said, 7'2 with no shoes on, 7'4 with shoes on, and the fluidity of his movements, I think that we're looking at maybe, potentially, if he stays healthy, one of the greatest players that we will ever see in the NBA.
His ability to impact every aspect of the game is what makes him unique.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of times you see certain players, oh, their offensive skill set allows them to be one of the most dominant. You're talking about a skill set that is one of the most dominant in the league at 7'5", shooting one-legged threes, right? That could get pushed off the block, has to work on his passing, of course. But combine that skill set offensively with the defensive lateral quickness, with the ability to stay disciplined defensively and to block shots not only on bigs, but also guards, because he could jump later than you. Right, so it's like, a lot of things like Jokic. Think about one of the abilities of Jokic is he's a master of leveraged angles, like on the block, right? So he'll hit you a pump fake. For a guy, and Jokic is 7 feet tall, but for a guy 7'3", 7'4", who has his wingspan, he can essentially stay down. Like you can wait for the ball to be released and then go get it because of his quick cat-like reflexes. That's what makes him unique and different.
When we talk about comps, and Jay, you like to usually combine two players at least to come up with a comp because you don't, you know, other than like Kobe to Jordan, there's usually differences in players, right? I'm looking, King, at Wembanyama and thinking if AD shot it better from the outside and was about 4 inches taller and longer, right, with a little
just think
better
about what
handle
you're saying,
maybe?
If AD were longer.
Right,
like AD's one of the tallest.
So stretch out AD and then give him an outside shot and maybe a little more handles. It looks like.
So maybe a mix of Kevin Durant
and AD
but longer.
That's why I said Ralph
Sampson.
Which
is crazy.
That's why it's more to me. It's Ralph Sampson combined with Dirk with the splash of KD.
See, Sampson, people, because was in the wrong era. He played in the
wrong era. By the way, he's been trained by Dirk's trainer. Yeah. So, like, a lot of the shots are, like, look at his motion around the perimeter. A lot of it's like what Dirk would be like in today's game with Dirk's game maturing for where it is today. Right? Like, Yeah. Dirk was the master of like one-legged step backs, things of that sort, fadeaways at 7 feet tall. He's doing that stuff on the perimeter.
I could see it. As you're mentioning it, we're showing there's like some Dirk in there when he's shooting. Yeah, if he turns into a real passer.
Look at that.
Oh, my goodness.
Look at that.
That's ridiculous. That's crazy.
Stuff like that where you're watching, we're watching on ESPNU right now, where literally it was between the legs at 7'3", fading away off one leg.
So he has, I sometimes think that people, whether they realize it or not, gauge and judge players based on trade value, right? Like if you had to, sometimes a guy is actually better than another guy, but you realize based on where he is in his career and everything, he's a little older. Yeah, but I wouldn't trade him for that other guy. Wembanyama has more trade value than anyone in the league right now, right? 100%. Would you trade anyone in the league for this kid who's never played in the NBA a single game?
No.
Not a single player in the league you trade for Wembanyama.
Hmm.
I don't think I would.
If I'm San Antonio?
You could trade Wembanyama
for... If I'm San Antonio, I would consider trading Jokic.
Trading for Jokic. So anyone else? Or is Jokic just right now?
Like straight up trade? Like Victor Wembanyama for Nikola Jokic?
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Can't pull the trigger for Jokic.
There's still some what-ifs, though.
I agree.
There are still some what-ifs.
Bird in the hand.
We have never seen a guy 7'5", be able to move like this. Yeah. So we don't know how durable he would be along a season, right? Because we've never seen a guy his size be able to move so fluid on a perimeter. So if, hypothetically, that scenario were to pop up, 100%. I go get a guy that was proven.
So you would trade him for Jokic?
100%. So I'm probably the only person I can
think
of.
So would you trade him for Kevin Durant?
No.
Would you trade him for LeBron James?
No. Not at this point.
Would you trade him for Giannis Antetokounmpo?
No, I wouldn't. Oof.
See, to me, Jokic and Giannis are the two that give you pause.
That's a tough one.
Jokic and Giannis are the two.
I don't think he shoots
Steph
the ball
well enough. Trade him for Steph Curry?
So, like, I think it's also it's a byproduct of, like, if you're saying trade it, yeah, it would change your franchise, but like, they're not a good team, too. So, like, I wonder how much, like, Jokic and Giannis should have no trade clauses, right? So, as much as you want to say,
no, but like, they're not a good team is the good point. Like,
you have to grow with this team
in a vacuum.
Over time. That's why I say no.
In a vacuum, maybe you would trade, but for this team, given his age and his salary, you never trade him for those guys because that guy's not going to win you a championship right now. But this guy over the next several years might if you can grow a team
and
around him.
My thing is, I'm like, if I'm Casey, if I'm these guys, I'm like, where are we going to be in 3-4 years? Mm. 4 years from now? Like, how can we do what Denver was able to do with their core and find a core and let them grow together and let them run the NBA for the next 10
and
years?
And will
that.
Greg Popovich still be coaching if and when Banyama wins a title in San Antonio? Does Popovich have another title in him now?
Oh,
Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.